All right, decisions enforced. Yep. I'm staring at two people right now who are going to enforce the decisions that are made today. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. Now, at the back end of the show, we're going to play the first part of an interview I did a couple of years ago with Dr. Willie Parker. Dr. Parker is an abortion provider, a courageous hero in today's world, who has an abortion clinic in Mississippi. He wrote about his journey to becoming an abortion provider in Life's Work, a moral argument for choice. And starting the show off, I'm pleased to be playing an interview I did recently with Annie Day and Noche Diaz of the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. The interview took place before International Women's Day, so they are talking about the importance of taking part in actions that have already occurred, but the need for everyone to take a stand and to fight for women to be recognized as full human beings everywhere in the world gets more acute every day. So here we go with Annie Day and Noche Diaz.
If you look at the times that we're in right now, if you can look at anything, if you can watch TV, listen to the news, listen to the radio, walk down the street and listen to people talking, there is all kinds of things going on about people trying to figure out what's happening. And unfortunately, not too many people are hitting on actually what really is happening and what needs to be done. But my guests today are two people who are part of a movement that is actually doing that full on. All right. And I am really, really pleased to welcome back to the show somebody who seems to always find her way in here. And I'm always pleased to see her. And I'm rarely always pleased to see anyone. Annie Day, welcome back, Annie.
Thank you, Michael. Wiley. I'm a Wiley revolutionary.
There you go. A Wiley revolutionary. You know, you got to come up with another one now. Noche Diaz, welcome back, man. Where you been?
I've been around here and there. Well, thanks for having me back, Michael. And I'm glad to be in L.A.
All right. Well, good. We're glad to have you guys and have everybody that came with you, because that's kind of part of what you're going to talk about, what is actually going to be happening in L.A. And actually, what happens in L.A. is going to impact a whole hell of a lot of people across the country. I think that's really important.
That's the mission. We're the national tour to get organized for an actual revolution, and we're here to change everything.
Yep. And that's good. And we're going to start right now. Okay, lock that door. Anyway, one of the things that, as I was preparing for the show today, talking with you guys, I kept thinking about that because, you know, there's so many people who have put so much of their heart into trying to figure out a way to change this harm in the world here, you know, all of this stuff. And they keep just, you know, they keep on coming through, but it is a heartbreaker. Mm-hmm. When you see this kind of stuff continue to develop and the kind of horror that we're moving into in terms of right now. And so I'm going to jump into talking with you guys right now, right? Because I could talk here all the way through. Right? You know I do that.
It's why people tune in, right?
Right, exactly.
We're changing everything today, though.
Yeah, there you go. Where'd you get this guy? Anyway, all right. So you're here with the National Organized Tour for an Actual Revolution. And you're back in L.A. It's been a while. Well, you're in L.A. I see you walking down the streets, mm-hmm. and I notice that you're running from me a lot of times. Okay. But I'm just getting all this funny stuff out.
I have a feeling that's not true.
Yeah, I know. But there is this thing of that you're back in the town with the L.A. tour. And, you know, I think a lot of people might ask, why? And what can people expect off of this? You know, what are you doing here?
I was here with the National Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour last year, and we began a process going back there because, you know, we're looking at this, a group of people who've come from around the country looking at this situation where here we have a world of unending horrors and a nightmare for humanity that this system causes. And at the same time, there exists what has never existed before in history in terms of people who want to end that, which is a leader, Bob Avakian, who's dedicated his entire life to going to work on figuring out developing and advancing the way we understand why things are the way they are, what has got humanity to this point, how we could actually fight our way out of this to a new society that could actually put an end to not just one, but all forms of oppression. And most people don't even know about it, aren't even looking for the answers to those kinds of questions, are walking around with their, you know, heads up their butts. and, you know, on the YouTube and the iPhone and the me, and we're out to shake people out of that, break them out of this sleepwalking through a nightmare, bring to them that another world is possible because of the work that's been done by Bob Avakian, if we go to work to take that up and to actually change everything with that, you know, scientific method and approach he's advanced and the strategy he's developed. And we're not just doing this for people, you know, and this is, you know, I'll say right why we came back is because we did a lot of important things last year. We inspired and attracted some people to turn their faces towards revolution. We rustled feathers here, there, and everywhere. And at the same time, you know, we did not make the breakthroughs that we were aiming for. And we have come back because we felt we left too soon and we actually have to get a different process going than what we were working on last year. So we've come back to, you know, because there's been a breach in the wall, so to speak, and we've come to fight our way through it to actually get to the other side where we can get a different thing going. And we're not just doing this, but you listening. You know, we're on this radio show not just to talk about all the good things we're doing, but we're here to put before people that we do not have to accept the world as it is, and we are going to enlist you in working on how we get from here to the world that's possible.
Just one thing, because I do want to make sure we do. He just mentioned this thing about getting to this, but I think it's actually important to tell people now, you know, the one big thing that's coming up on Sunday, you know, because there is actually, to me, that was something that really struck my heart in terms of when I saw that, and I thought, damn, this is something that's really important. And not just important, it's important in its own right, but it's also important in the context of everything else that you're trying to do, that we're trying to do around what's happening in society right now, what's happening in the world. So why don't we talk a little bit about like that, Annie?
So this Sunday is International Women's Day. This is actually a revolutionary holiday that's been corporatized, defanged, and turned into a celebration of getting in on this system when what we really need to be doing is getting rid of this system. So this Sunday, International Women's Day, and we're inviting everyone hearing our voices to join us. And look, we're calling on everyone to come, everyone who won't accept a world where women are subordinated or dominated or degraded. Everywhere we turn, in our most intimate spaces and on every broadcasted from TVs and films to the music, everywhere around the world, people who refuse to accept that should join us.
Mm-hmm. You know, part of what I was thinking, too, when I was reading around this and just following it over the last period of time, that one of the things when you talk about this, you know, you also call on people to bring symbols of the oppression of women, which I think is very, very heavy, because one thing is when you start to think about the symbols of the oppression of women, you know, you could, you know, look, you know, and probably a lot of guys are going, but there's actually, when you start to think about it, you crack open a whole, you know, you crack open the lid on a cesspool that's actually in, you know, that's here, that exists, is thriving, is just flowing all under every vein of this society, and this, not just this country, the entire world, when you think about that. And so the importance of actually breaking through that and bringing that to people, I thought was actually incredibly important to be, you know, listening. And I don't remember, you know, there's a certain depth and necessity that's associated with this now, and what you've been talking about, what you guys have been talking about, and what you're doing, what you're trying to bring forward, what you're trying to put into motion, you know, it's interesting too, because you also have this. Well, I'll talk about the other part later, because there's something else I wanted to point out, because there is a development of this happening nationwide, or not nationwide,
worldwide,
yeah. And I mean, I was thinking about this thing about in Mexico, which really blew my mind, with all these women that are going to disappear for a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you think about that in relation to all the rape and the pillage and the horror that's been, you know, thrown down on women in all of the world, but especially the way that it's been manifesting itself in Mexico. It's a very important thing. So can we kick that around a bit?
Yeah, look, I mean, you were asking about the form of people bringing symbols of women's oppression. And the purpose here is because this has to stop, okay? And people have learned to put up with and live with the subordination of half humanity all over the world. And the fight against it has, frankly, been, I mean, look where we are, all over the world. You mentioned Mexico, you know, there's Iran and the women there who are rising up against the enforced covering of women. And there's the femicides in Mexico. There's the, you know, the women sold into sexual slavery. And then right here in this country, as we speak, the Supreme Court is litigating on whether or not they can close down the abortion clinics in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And this will have ramifications, you know, for women, for all women throughout this society, but also as part of a direction in this country of instituting a fascism with a Christian fundamentalist theocracy at its heart, and the Handmaid's Tale vision of the future for women and LGBTQ people, that's part of, you know, this is 2020, and this is the situation that people are facing. Okay, and we have gone out and, you know, on different campuses and different neighborhoods, and there's people who have learned to see what they have gone through, even what they have gone through, as just normal, as things that are part of what you have to learn to live with in this world, and people need to stop living with it and not just sort of swallow their hate and anger at their oppression, but also not just let it loose on themselves or on just people around them. But, you know, this is part of why the slogan is break all the chains and unleash the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. Okay, that, because this can be part of fighting to end not only this, but all oppression. And on this day, you know, there's these symbols that people need to bring. There's going to be stops along the march where that capture different elements of, you know, the fabric of women's oppression all around the world. And people are going to be speaking on that. And all gender oppression and oppression based on sexual orientation. And I do want to say, though, the part of the point is also that this has to feed into the, you know, mighty force revolution. This has to feed into a force and a movement that is growing, and where people are working together to figure out how to uncork this all throughout society. This is a great opportunity to bring that together and let people know that, you know, this is a hallmark of what Bob Avakian has been working on, you know, for the last few decades, of advancing the understanding of what the oppression of women and the enforcement of male supremacy has to do with all divisions of humanity into masters and slaves, and how the ending of that oppression has to do with ending all oppression. And on this day, a force manifesting around this revolution with, you know, with at the core of it, people who are following this leader, who are aiming for the whole thing and not just to make a day out of it, although we definitely need to make a day out of it, but we need to make advances in building a force for revolution so we can actually put an end to this, where we can get to a world where this is no more.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm talking today with Annie Day and Noche Diaz from the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. Listen up, folks, because this is one of the more important, you know, programs that we've done. And I think I feel it very deeply myself, but I think actually society, when you look at this and you look at what's been allowed and what's hanging out there and what's sort of even joked about or laughed about or presented as, you know, even just presented in a way as well, it happens, you know, and that's it, as if that would be accepted for any other, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's accepted for black people when they're lynched, you know, so is that what we're talking about? And Annie, I want to ask you this too, because I don't know if you have something.
Yeah, I do. Michael, you asked about, you said it's like lifting a lid off a cesspool. And I really feel when we've been going out this week to talk with people about representing and coming to this International Women's Day, I feel like we've just begun to lift a lid off the cesspool. And you hear it when people are talking about their experiences, about, you know, and even themselves coming to see what they've experienced, which they have otherwise so completely accepted as something that maybe they shouldn't get used to. The call for International Women's Day, I'm going to read this quote, and then I want to say just a couple of things that people have responded with. The call for International Women's Day has this challenge to the imagination from Bob Avakian. He said, what if the world doesn't have to be this way? What if women could walk down the street and look every man they encounter straight in the eye and fear nothing, and not be made to feel that you're on display and to be evaluated by how you sexually titillate them? What if no more women were ever again battered, raped, assaulted, denied the right to control their own bodies? What if people who were different in their sexual orientation or just in the way they went through life, instead of being discriminated against and bullied, were valued for their difference? If that were seen as part of the great diversity of humanity, you may say I'm a dreamer, but this is not just a dream. It is something for which there is a definite basis in reality. And it's up to us together with people throughout the world to make it a reality. And that's a quote from Avakian that is part of a larger clip people should go look up online, the What Ifs. And we've read this to people, to young women and men on you know, college campuses this week. And I've had people respond to this by saying things like, I never thought something like that was possible. One young woman said she spent her growing up as a kid, her father used to watch pornography in the living room from when she was a toddler. And this is what the images she saw of what women were supposed to be. That same woman actually also told me that her father's nickname for her was the B word. And this is what she was called from a very young age. And I said that to somebody else at a different college. And the young woman said, whoa, it's true. I never thought of that as a derogatory term. This is what people call themselves, are called their whole lives, and are told to think that that's who they are and that's what they mean. Women who've talked about sexual assault, who've talked about rape, who've talked about how the sports players at their campus won't go out with them because they're not submissive enough. And they're told to think that what they ought to be is more submissive because they're not trained to see themselves or throughout all of every fabric of society treated like an actual full human being. And when we've talked about the symbols of oppression people could bring, they've talked about bringing waist trainers, which are those like modern day girdles, the violent pornography, where they know they were talking about this and seeing that millions of men are watching these images that are nothing but the most, you know, despicable images of violence and degradation, which is how they are then seen and treated to see themselves. The question of the fact that we're about to lose the right to abortion and then increasingly people seeing the oppression that they face as linked up with the oppression of women all around the world. And I want to, you know, say this. The other response I got at a different college campus was a young woman who heard this quote from Avakian and said, wow, I feel so hopeless. And she described this feeling hopeless. And then, you know, her friend that was with her talked about feeling suicidal sometimes because she just can't take it. And this depth of individualized hopelessness, feeling the desperation that this is what it is and it's all that can ever be. And the fact is, and the problem is, they don't know there's an actual way out, that they don't know the problem's not them. They don't know the problem is not just men, that it's not greed, that it's not in our human nature. They have to find out about the new communism. They have to find out about the fact that there's a leadership, Bob Avakian, who really has developed a very serious strategy for how to defeat this system. And we're putting them back to them. What would it change if there were millions of people fighting for this revolution? How might that change the challenge to the imagination? So this is what we're aiming to project on International Women's Day, and I just want to invite everyone to come become a part of it. We don't have to put up with this nightmare anymore.
In fact, don't put up with it and stop this damn thing.
Yeah,
because
that's right.
People, if you see it, you got to stop it. You know, we really need to actually open this up, sisters and brothers. We need to open this up in a way that actually where people can talk about what Annie was talking about, but also not just talk about it, but actually talk about doing something to figure out what to do around this. Because that's the thing. It's like, I know from people in my family, I don't think that there's a woman in my family that has not been abused. You know, we grew up, and this is not like ringing a bell for the whacked out but, you know, I lived in a part of Philadelphia that mm-hmm. the biggest thing we got was for July 4th was watching the gas go up on the you know, on the refineries. And, you know, and then we had cops that came after us, all this other stuff. But the big thing that was probably the most horrific thing that was done was that the women were treated. And I know particularly from my own family, I know particularly from women that I had, you know, was friends with or that I eventually ended up going with or something at a certain point. And you would hear people who would be extremely surprised because you weren't going to slap them across the face if they mm-hmm. did something. And it, that always stuck with me. And I keep thinking about, you know, look, we have a possibility now to actually stop this, you know, to fight to stop this. But it's going to take a lot of effort. It's going to take something, both facing up that there is truth and there are lies. And you've got to be able to distinguish between them. Now, you had something you wanted to play. Did you want to play that now?
Yeah, it actually also has to do with lifting the lid off the cesspool. So this is a clip from Bob Avakian from a longer talk. And the clip is titled, painfully, it's titled A World of Rape and Sexual Assault.
And what about the situation of women in this greatest of all countries? Having to live in a man's world, that is, a world of male supremacy, a world of rape and sexual assault. Think of this fact. Between 1/4 and 1/3 of all women in the U.S. will be raped or sexually assaulted in their lifetimes. A woman is raped almost every minute in this country. Now, this makes me think of something that the great African-American novelist and writer Richard Wright put into the beginning of one of his books, Big Boy Leaves Home. It's a story also that begins in the rural South. It's a story of some young black boys who go out for have a little fun on one day. They go down for a walk by the river. They're having fun with each other the way kids do. They're laughing and playing. They're walking along the edge of the river, and all of a sudden they take a turn in the river, and there is a white woman bathing in the river. And suddenly they're struck with terror, because they know through no fault of their own, and purely by the accident of making that curve in the river, their lives are now in danger, that they could be lynched just for coming upon this white woman in this way. And this same kind of situation exists for women throughout the society. You go shopping. Maybe you have to go at night because you work during the day. You come out of the store. If the lights aren't working in the parking lot, or if you're parked in the wrong place, you have a real fear of being attacked and raped. If you're walking down the street and there's a place there that's a little bit hidden where somebody could be hiding, you have a real fear of being attacked and raped. If you go the wrong place at the wrong time, or if you do something that some asshole says means you asked for it, you could be attacked and raped. Now, Elaine Boozler is a comedian. She got at this point in a way of using humor to illustrate a very serious and deadly thing. She told about how, in one of her routines, she told about how she came out of a movie with a male friend of hers, a good friend, and he said, "Oh, it's a beautiful night. Why don't we go for a walk down by the river?" And she said, "Well, maybe it's safe for you, but I don't think I'm going for a walk down by any river. It's late at night, it's dark, and I'm carrying a vagina." Now, this is a way to use humor to make a deadly serious point. And another cold statistic captures a real horror lived by women every day. A woman is battered in the U.S. every 15 seconds. And by far, this is done most often by their boyfriends or husbands, who have been trained and conditioned to view these women not as equal partners, but as something like their property, their possession, and a breeder of their children. For most of the time the United States has existed, and even within the lifetimes of many people still alive today, there were laws in many states in the U.S. which, in terms of the rights of persons, did not include women in the category of persons with these rights. And these laws and the customs that went along with them openly treated women as inferior and subordinate to their husbands and to men in general. As I pointed out in the book, Preaching from a Pulpit of Bones, up until less than 20 years ago, there were still states in the U.S. where there was no such thing as marital rape, where a husband could legally force his wife to have sex with him whether she wanted to or not. And for most of the history of this country, this was a situation for wives in general. And then there is the move, backed and encouraged from the highest offices of the land, to keep cutting back and ultimately to take away from women the right to have an abortion. Upholding and fighting for the right of abortion is a crucial part of fighting for the emancipation of women in the fullest sense. It is a crucial part of freeing women from every form of domination and oppression by men, breaking the chains on half the human race, enabling women to take part fully and equally in every sphere of society, and in the struggle to radically change all of society. Denying women the right to abortion, denying them the right to decide when or if they will have children, with everything that means and all the effects that will have on their lives. Denying this is like battering and rape. Denying the right to abortion is a means of exercising forcible control by a male supremacist society over the very lives of women and over their bodies.
All right. Welcome back. That was Bob Avakian telling some very heavy truth that people need to not just listen to, but figure out how's it apply in what you're doing and how's it, what are you going to do about it? I mean, this is really, this is an essential question. There's too many times that people just look at statistics and, oh, those are pretty heavy, and then walk on. You know, there's a whole thing. And the thing, one of the things I love about Avakian is you can always hear the the combination of his brain and his heart, mm-hmm. you know, and it's really important for people to check that when you do listen to this, because it's the kind of stuff that we're dealing with in a society that doesn't have to, this does not have to exist. And this society doesn't have to exist. Its time is done. And what it's going to do, and what we've seen, how it's doing this, is it's getting, you know, it's slaughtering the world. And this is not hyperbole. It's that there could be no world. We're not talking about in a million years. We're talking about shortly. This kind of stuff can happen, and the kind of politics that's going on, the kind of things that are being instituted. So let's jump into this a little bit more, because I keep thinking as I'm hearing this, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, there's this thing we can talk about. Okay, it's not. We want to get a world where women are not subordinated, dominated, degraded, battered, mutilated, and murdered. To keep that just think of that description. What the hell does that say? That you have to think about, oh, we don't have to have a world. Really? We don't have to have a world where women are treated like dirt, animals, toys, whatever. You know, it's just they're treated worse than anything. And it doesn't have to be this way. And there's people... People have a responsibility to dig into, to look into what is at the root of this. Why is it happening, and what's it going to take to change this?
Sorry, I was just thinking while you were talking about, I'm sorry, my mind was wandering. I was just thinking about like 100 years from now, if we break through. I mean, it should seem ridiculous that we have to be on this radio or on street corners saying women are human beings, and how stupid it's going to look when people are living in a whole different world, that people had to even say things like that, and that you had to, and that people could be living this, and it wasn't something that all of society stopped and said, this cannot happen. And that, gratefully, is going to be part of what's happening in Mexico on Monday in response to these femicides that have been going on, where women are being killed for being women at alarming rates, 1,100, I think, last year. Mm-hmm. Close to 100 this year so far. And this, this Sunday, I really want everybody, this point about what people will look back on, that depends on what we do now.
I just want to add to that. Look, there's going to work. You know, if you're listening to us and you're vibing with the outrage at what is, including in what we just heard from Avakian, what Michael and Noche are saying, really in the deepest depths of your feet, in the fiber of your being, think about what it would mean if we had a whole different world. And tell us why that's not possible. If you've read the strategy for revolution that Avakian has developed, if you've looked at the Constitution for a new socialist republic in North America, if you even, come to look at and recognize this actually really hasn't always been this way. These things are not permanent. And yet people, because there's not a serious debate over reform versus revolution, because there's not a serious debate about what is versus what a whole different world that really could be, then people get so inured to this. They get numbed by it. And one of the things I just personally really deeply appreciate about Avakian is that he challenges people to don't turn your scars and the brutality enforced on you by this system into a justification to turn yourself into a victim or to fight to get a better piece of it or a bigger share of it. Join with others in fighting to get rid of it. And that joy and that determination is going to find itself all together with us in the streets on Sunday. And people need to be a part of that, need to be a part of coming together to figure out actually, okay, how is this going to spread? What are all the ways this impacts people? How are we going to break the chains?
Yeah, I really agree. And I just want to say to to the guys listening, you're not off the hook. Or, you know, you shouldn't just cheer on the women who are going to be out there, you know. This should go without saying, but it doesn't. You know, that this is not just women's fight. This is for everybody who wants to see a world where humanity is free. And part of the problem is that too many people who are not directly affected by this do not speak out and join in with others to stand up against. And part of our strength, part of the strength of this revolution that Bob Avakian is leading, is that we're not bringing forward people who are just fighting for their liberation and their own oppression, or just people like them, but we're bringing forward emancipators of humanity. Women, men, differently gendered people from every, you know, walk of life and from every corner of the globe to fight for that. And that's part of our great strength and what we'll be manifesting in the streets this Sunday. And, you know, we're not, again, you know, I did want to say to the guys, you're not off the hook, okay? There's a need for everybody to actually be there and be part of forging this new force of that, of people fighting for the liberation of all humanity. And on this day, you know, calling out the patriarchal domination of women and all gender and sexual orientation oppression.
You know, one thing I was thinking, and I have to say, it's sort of like when you're looking at this, you know, there's a lot of things that people will say that they're doing, that they're standing up against this, they're doing whatever. But there's a whole thing here of which I thought was really important, which is that it doesn't have to be this way, but it also requires that people have some understanding. Not just of why, but what to do to make it not happen, you know? And we need to have more of that widespread understanding. And I'd like to talk about that, because it requires, you know, look, revolutionary change requires active participation of people who see the danger and responsibility of what's in front of them, you know? And I think that's important, because too many people rest easy with, you know, sort of, well, I don't do it, mm-hmm. or I've read this is horrible. I can't allow this to continue. Well, if you really can't allow it to continue, you got to do something. You know, that's sort of part of the way that sentence finishes out. You know, so let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, we're wrestling with more in this tour is the challenge that you got to do something, but really stepping into the revolution first and foremost requires your mind. It does require people getting into Avakian's work. Why? Because there is a way to understand why this is all happening and how to make it stop. There really is a way to understand this, and there's billions of people experience it in all different ways, whether it be the oppression of women and hatred of LGBT people, which we're talking about here today, whether it be the deep-seated white supremacy, the wars for empire, the, you know, cataclysmic destruction of our planet and the hatred of immigrants. All of these things are combined and woven together, but more fundamentally, they're woven together into a system of capitalism, imperialism. There's ways to understand these things. This is the breakthrough that Avakian has made, is a scientific understanding of the nature of the problem and identifying a framework for human emancipation that then people have to come together to wrestle with and to apply, because we have big problems we face in making revolution. It's completely possible. This system can be defeated. There's no guarantees, but it can be defeated. How are we going to go at that? How is this going to spread? How are you going to go up against the repression that the system faces? How are we going to go up against and change all this deep, you know, the way people are just cutthroat going for themselves, which the system enforces on people and then people take up? How are we going to spread a revolt against this revolting culture, which we're surrounded by and enmeshed in the music we listen to and in the and among the people we date? How is this going to break out? How are we going to have new social relations? These are some of the problems that people actually have to come together and solve. And if you're hearing us and you're feeling it, but you're agonized about, you know, whatever it is, your time, you're too busy, you're depressed, come together with others and let's put our heads to bringing into being a whole different world and fighting to live that today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, I think that's absolutely, I agree with that. I wanted to say too, you know, a lot of times it poses itself as a personal problem when you confront the world and look at it, you know. And one of the things about, you know, this revolution and Bob Avakian is that, you know, this is actually part of the big problem that humanity is facing, that the world is a nightmare and it does not have to be this way. And the big problem that we're working on is that there is a way out. There is hope for humanity on a scientific basis, you know, because of the work Avakian has done. And there is tremendous hopelessness throughout humanity because nobody knows about it, and there aren't people who are actively working together consciously and actively to solve, you know, that and other, you know, problems of the revolution. And the, you know, again, there's, you know, acting now, there's engaging the work. But if there is a force of people who are actually taking this up and saying to the world, we are going to work on getting from here to the world that could be. We have a constitution Avakian has written that would, day one, give us a whole different foundation for how people can relate to each other and back people up to change everything even further and at its roots. And we are going to work now. And if there were a force of thousands throughout this society, throughout this country, not waiting for somebody at the top who's going to win an election and get in there and figure out how to, at best, channel all your hopes and dreams back into the system that causes all your nightmares and hopelessness, but a force of thousands saying we are preparing for the time when we can put an end to this whole system, this whole empire, for people not just here but all around the world. That could change what everyone thinks of as possible and how they see this question of can I be part of taking responsibility for what I see as a problem in the world.
I'm going to ask you one more question, but I also want to remind people that you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm talking with Annie Day and Noche Diaz. Okay, which one is Annie? Which one? I've known you too long. Anyway, I just
get confused sometimes.
Yes, I know. I am going to have to ask you one last question, and you can both do it, but I want to actually ask you, because I've heard this man talking a lot, and you will have a chance to say something too, but I'm eating up all my time. You know, this question of what we allow is not just what we condone, but it's what we become. And that has good implications and very bad implications. Let's talk about that.
I think that's really right. And it has to do with what Noche was just talking about. When you're confronting both the world that is and thinking about why it's all happening and what we're going to do about it, I do think the first question in even coming to recognize or fight for fundamental change is people have to step into the fight, to stop being bystanders, to stop shaking your head when you hear about the femicides in Mexico or when you know, find out what's happening in India with the sexual assault and rape or the women sold into sex slavery in Indonesia. Really a world of hurt. At a time when all around the world, the rise of reactionary regimes are hurling women backwards, people have to decide where they're going to stand. And I wanted to read one more quote from Avakian, which I think captures the moment we're in and the decision people are confronted with. Avakian said, and he said this some years ago, he said, "The whole question of the position and role of women in society is more and more acutely posing itself in today's extreme circumstances," which certainly applies to the world today, I'll just add. He said, "It's not conceivable that all this will find any resolution other than in the most radical terms. The question yet to be determined is, will it be a radical reactionary or a radical revolutionary resolution? Will it mean the reinforcing of the chains of enslavement or the shattering of the most decisive links in those chains and the opening up of the possibility of realizing the complete elimination of all such forms of enslavement?" And right now, that's the choice people have to make. Are we going to stand aside while the right to abortion hangs by a thread, the right to access to birth control? Are we going to stand aside when Bolsonaro in Brazil is calling on mobs to attack LGBTQ people? Are we going to stand aside while Sharia law gets enforced in Afghanistan and Iran? Are we going to stand aside? Or are we going to get in the streets and fight for a different future? And that's what we call on everyone to join us on Sunday. People can find out about it, revcom.us. This is where you go to find the works of Bob Avakian, to hook up with the Movement for Revolution. So that's the choice people have to make. Are we going to stand aside? Are we going to get in the streets and fight to stop this and fight for a whole better world?
Now, you both know, I know that you're here for quite some time. And you, I know you're here all the time. But you're here for quite some time. And I can find out where you live.
We look forward to coming back, and you don't even have to drag us out of our home.
There you go. All right. And we look forward to having you back. We're going to
thank you for having us,
Michael. Sure,
man. I'll see you soon.
Thank you both very much. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
I waited all my life to play, but I still can't find a way. But if I work it one more day, I might just break the chains. I might just break the chains. I might just break the chains. That especially where we from, where we grew up, like a green thumb, like a criminal, the only thing you can become. Look at what I became, something like a phenom, nothing but a G-thang. Things I've seen when I'm looking out of these.
That was Lupe Fiasco with Break the Chain. Now we'll hear part of the interview I did with Dr. Willie Parker a few years back.
All right, I recently read a book that when I saw the title of it, I had to get it. And it was because it's something that I've paid a lot of attention to over the last few decades, and in particular, this book was also written by a person that I really have followed what he's been doing and admired what he's been doing and think he's actually doing work that is absolutely necessary. I consider him actually a very courageous hero in the world today. His name is Dr. Willie Parker, and his book is Life's Work, A Moral Argument for Choice. Dr. Parker, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. Glad to be here.
Sure. Well, let's jump into this right away. You've said that actually, and I think this characterizes a lot of what you do, you said you want to make it so abortion occupies the moral high road in society, in the world today. And it's something that actually has not been done, but it's actually something that you've dedicated your life to doing. Let's talk about why.
Well, you know, I would like to make abortion be a non-issue morally. Abortion should be no more moral or immoral than a person taking care of their health. And in this case, women taking care of themselves means that they should have the right, that they are morally entitled to the right to make decisions about their health, their lives, and their body. If I say a moral high road, if we say that the opposition to abortion, it can be found on the road of morality, then I think the right to have an abortion has to be placed on that same road by allowing people who are opposed to abortion to turn it into a moral issue with no counter-narrative or no alternative position on that is by default to make women taking care of themselves a moral issue and more in particular to make it an immoral issue. And I think that has allowed policymakers and people who see the world a certain way to elevate their position to one superior over the interest of a woman that she should be allowed to have in herself.
Now, one of the things that happens in all this is, which is also something you speak to right away in your book, and I thought it was very interesting that you did, you start off the book with a statement that one rarely ever hears, that as an abortion provider, I'm doing God's work. And this kind of captures a lot about your life and your role in the world. It also captures a lot of what the terms of the battle are with these people who are the anties out there who actually do want to chain women back in the prehistoric times, who basically want to make it so that women's bodies are controlled by men. They don't have any moral or actual real control over their body, or nor should they have it. So you actually have argued this as you're an abortion provider doing God's work, and that's going right up against these other people who also argue that they are doing God's work.
Sure. What it does is two things. Number one, the reality that for me, the reason I do this work, to make public my religious beliefs and my understanding in the context of the work I do, it wasn't anything strategic or tactical. It was to speak the truth about from where I live my life and where I get my values from. They are rooted in my understanding of Christianity, which for me became a conscious decision to pursue when I was 15 years old. And in that I've for so long held my beliefs as personal and most relevant to me has been why I've been most uncomfortable putting them in the public domain. But to the degree that those of us who understand the morality of a woman making her own personal decisions, to the degree that it's religious for any of us, it has to be religious for all of us. And so for me, just as people who are opposed to abortion and related to their religious or God understanding, and then they say that it prompts them to oppose abortion from a place of religious judgment, I come at my understanding about what I'm supposed to do and feel for other human beings in the context of religious compassion. Compassion is also to be found in religion, and it is simply the notion that the greatest action you can take on behalf of another person is to help them in their time of need. So people who are opposed to abortion are entitled to their opinions and even their religious beliefs about them, and so am I. If I say I'm supportive of abortion and they say that they are against abortion, we're each entitled to believe that. My notion is that with each of us having opposite notions, the public conversation around the morality of abortion should be canceled out within religious understanding. And what we should be really left with is the person who has to make the decision about whether or not to have an abortion. They should be left with what their inner voice is telling them. If one's sense of morality is personal and deeply spiritual and should govern you, then my position on abortion or the position of a person opposed to abortion should not be overbearing to a woman as she's having to make this decision.
Now, you've argued, and your training as a scientist and your actual involvement with science from the time when you were a teenager is actually really important in relation to all this, too. And it's actually, you've said that for you, not carrying out abortions and not living out the convictions you have would be a fate worse than death. Let's talk about that.
Well, what I mean by that is we all live from a place of what means most to us and being true to oneself. As a scientist and understanding and appreciating the world in an evidence and empirical-based way, the natural forces of life, the scientific, biologic realities of life, they are indifferent to what my beliefs are. You know, the sun comes up whether I believe in it or not. Gravity is a force that works whether you believe in it or not. So having that appreciation or an empirical appreciation for the world and reality sit side by side with my non-empiric appreciation for reality. And that is what we found in my spiritual understandings of things that are equally important to me, and they are deeply personal. Whereas the scientific realities aren't personal, they are there and we all stand equal before them. My religious beliefs are quite personal. And because they're personal and subjective, they may not work or be plausible or palatable for someone else. And so it's with that understanding that I hold both of my identities in an integrated way. And so it's because I understand that my beliefs are personal, I have to decide when I'm working and living in the world and interacting with other people, which frame of reference is going to be most relevant. The one when it comes to making decisions about policy, about how we are going to allocate resources, about what freedoms and liberties and restrictions we're going to make for people, those have to be related to the thing in our world and in our reality that's most objective. And the most objective things are empirically based decisions or conclusions that we reach via science. And as I say that, I repeat the words of Albert Einstein when he said that not all that matters can be counted, and not all that can be counted matters. I'm not making an argument to say that if it's not based solely in empirical understanding, that it's not important. What I am saying is the things that should govern how we make our decisions as we live a community have to be based on the things that we all stand objective before. Religion is not one of those things, but science is.
Very important. And one of the things that you look at today, I mean, look, abortion rights, as I was reading your book and as I'm going through this and I'm thinking, abortion rights today is under an unprecedented attack. I mean, more so than ever before. And it's a battleground, and it's a very dangerous battleground for women on many different fronts. And you're in the middle of that. Let's talk about how you see that battleground.
Well, I see the ability to turn a biologic reality like the fact that 1 in 3 women in their lives will end a pregnancy. And the pregnancies that are in this country and around the world, the majority of them that are ended are ones that are unplanned and unwanted. But unplanned does not mean unwanted, because over half of unplanned pregnancies are continued. And the ones that are unwanted and unplanned are the ones that end up in abortion. So something that is that common and that is a part of the biologic reality of women cannot be placed in the realm of people's preferences or likes and dislikes. Women need to have access to abortion care because we know empirically, without question, that when abortion is legal, it is safe and accessible. And when it's illegal, it is unsafe and it is very dangerous. We now have people who have grabbed power who, because ideologically, they find abortion and the biological reality that women need to end pregnancies distasteful, means that those of us who understand the importance of abortion from a safety standpoint can't stand by and watch what we know will happen if people are allowed to, because of their ideologies, they're allowed to control the health and lives of people who don't share their ideology. So it is a battleground, for lack of a better metaphor, because on both sides of this issue, people who are deeply convinced of what they think about it are motivated to defend their position. But what also makes it a battleground is that the argument, or at least the issue, is often framed in the context of what I call a false equivalency. The pro-life, pro-choice narrative has lent itself very well to people oversimplifying what the abortion decision is. And it is not one simply of pro-life and pro-choice. As a person who provides abortions, I'm pro-life. I'm pro-life of the mother. And so within the context of being against abortion or supportive of abortion, there's an element of choice in both of those sides. If you are against abortion, you can choose not to have one. And if you find yourself needing an abortion, you can choose to have one. But the pro-life, pro-choice narrative lends itself unnecessarily to battle conflict, which makes the analogy of war a very apt one.
Now, Dr. Parker, you've also said, and some of the stuff that you're talking to leads right into this, it's like, very few doctors today have abortion as a specialty, even though almost every doctor is trained in one way or another to handle abortions. What's the scene here? I mean, what is it that actually has created a situation where residents train to do abortions, but the vast majority of them don't end up doing them? And overall, there's been an extremely sharp decline, as I understand it, in the numbers of abortion providers out in the world today.
Well, there certainly would have been, because of the politicizing of the issue, the domestic terrorism around the issue, where people have been harmed, there have been 11 people killed, 4 of them were doctors, in the context of providing abortion care. That certainly has made what I call for non-democratic dissent against abortion, even though abortion remains legal through terrorism and exploitation of regulations. Those opposed to abortion have been able to punch above their weight, if you will. And what I mean by that, if you look at the fact that the majority of people in this country, over 50% of people approve of abortion in some form or some fashion, the fact that we now have hundreds of local restrictions on abortion, even though abortion remains legal, has resulted in this hostile environment where people who could provide abortions don't. People who are now training in abortion care, many of them have been restricted in access to abortion education, because a lot of medical education occurs at the hospital and clinical level in Catholic hospitals, which often have charters and mandates prohibiting access to abortion or training around abortion. So one of the things we've been trying to do is gain more control over the regulations of medical education to require people to train in abortion care. And so there are certainly the regulations that are shifting, but there's also the kind of consumer demand. And by that, I mean young people who are entering into medicine, who are aware of the loss of access. They are actually seeking medical education that will provide them with the training to provide abortion. So organizations like Medical Students for Choice at the medical school level, women's studies and reproductive rights and reproductive justice or interest groups at the college level are informing people of abortion access challenges, and those people are aspiring to enter into medicine with the intent of becoming abortion providers. You have people who are pursuing education as non-physicians who are fighting for the right to be able to provide abortions, like nurse practitioners, midwives, and the like. So there's a consumer demand, but it's been thwarted in large part that even as abortion remains legal, again, domestic terrorism around people being harmed and injured, perpetually harassed and marginalized in their choice of a medical career, that is kind of cowering people away from providing the care. But I think that that's changing.
Now, what about the question, though, that also comes up a lot in relation to if women can't find somebody to actually give them an abortion, if they can't find a doctor or a clinic or something, or they can't afford it or whatever, they oftentimes turn to do-it-yourself abortions. And that seems to be a major plague in the world today, and directly a product of the kind of oppression that you're talking about coming down around women. Let's talk about that.
Well, actually, to your point, the majority of abortions that happen today in the world happen under unsafe circumstances, because the majority of them happen in places around the world, especially developing countries that have been controlled by people with fundamentalist religious understanding or very patriarchal ones. In those places, abortion is illegal, and in those places, that's where we see the greatest number of mortalities related to abortion. The mortalities come from the reality that I wish people simply understand that a woman or a person who's pregnant and they don't want to be, when they are resolved to not be pregnant, they will do whatever they need to do to end their pregnancy, such that a woman will choose illegal or unsafe abortion to end the pregnancy versus acquiescing to the reality of having a safe, legal pregnancy. So it's to say that women will do whatever they need to do. They will choose something that's potentially life-threatening if it's going to allow them to accomplish their reproductive goal, even when they could simply acquiesce and do something that would be safer. So women are committed to achieving their reproductive goals and not having their lives controlled by the interest of others. And so what that means is when we outlaw abortion, we don't make it less frequent. We make it less safe. The reality is that before Roe and after Roe, the number of abortions were approximately the same. What was different is the number of women who died from abortion. Deaths from abortions in this country became virtually nil from unsafe abortions. There's an intrinsic risk to every procedure, no matter how skilled the person is or no matter how optimal the circumstances are. People sometimes die. When you see a person goes in for a routine tonsillectomy and they don't wake up, there's an intrinsic risk with every procedure. But we know that when abortion is safe and is legal, that it is so safe that women rarely die from abortion. But yet when it's illegal and women are taking desperate measures, abortion becomes extremely risky, and the implications go beyond just a woman losing her life. Many women who have abortions are already parents, so that means children become orphans. Women have abortions are already partnered. That means that spouses or lovers lose a partner. And so there's an impact as a society if those people were working. We lose people who can contribute. So there's losses on multiple levels when we lose sight of the fact that simply outlawing abortions doesn't make them less frequent. It only makes them less safe.
And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank all of my guests today. And thanks to my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and all of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Talk to you again next week.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Oh, where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of 12 dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard.